It's Lynn Rossetto Casper with The Splendid Table. Today, it's how a great restaurant is made, literally. How a chef repeatedly named the best in the country rethinks his kitchen. Thomas Keller of French Laundry fame tours us behind the scenes of his new New York hit, Per Se. Now I say, forget the dining room, wait till you get to the kitchen. The Sterns are in Oklahoma City in a place where choice is not an option. We have cookbook picks for rookies and thrill seekers. Then wine maverick Josh Wesson talks the new muscle man grape, Merved. And crack cook Sally Schneider has a rescue ingredient that can save a dish, the vanilla bean of all things. All this and your calls coming up on The Splendid Table. But first, this.
Thank you.
It's Lynn Rossetto Casper, and you're listening to The Splendid Table, the show for people who love to eat. Our program is produced by American Public Media and brought to you by Super Target. Well, today it's the mother of all kitchen tours. Chefs call Thomas Keller the most talented cook in America. Now, when he set out to duplicate his California restaurant, The French Laundry, in New York City, he played iconoclast. He dictated every design element, but for unheard of reasons. We're going to get a personal tour. Reform sommelier Josh Wesson talks the newest muscle grape on the block, Mourvèd. Food expert Sally Schneider has a surprise ingredient to rescue dull dishes. Then it's a new food trivia game. And as always, in the second half of the show, we're going to be opening lines for your calls. You can get to us at 800-537-5252. So let's get things started the way we do every week with Jane and Michael Stern. They pen the Road Food column in Gourmet Magazine.
Lynn, we have to tell you about a place that is just somehow ultimate Stern food. It's called Sleepy Hollow, and it's in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. And it has been there forever, forever being 1948. But I think that qualifies as forever.
That does. So what makes it Stern food? I mean, what do they serve?
Well, what makes it ultimate Stern dining experience is the fact that the menu is extremely limited. You have a choice of either chicken or steak. And I think maybe there's shrimp, but who cares? We don't even want to know about it. The steak.
The main thing is you get these fabulous homemade biscuits with your meal.
Yeah, little wonderful toasty homemade biscuits warm from the oven. And the steaks and fried chicken are utterly exemplary. I mean, this is the kind of steak that you want when you're going through Oklahoma City. As good as what you get over at the Stockyards Cafe.
You know, Lynn, everybody talks about Kansas as, you know, that's kind of steak central.
Mm-hmm.
But truly, I think the best steaks I have ever had outside New York City, which really does still hold up the banner, is in Oklahoma. They are fabulous.
When you say fried chicken and steak, I mean, I do think like 1940s style cafe.
Yep.
Is that what the place is like?
It's more like a 1940s style country club. It's a little more upscale than a cafe. It has that sort of private club feel. I mean, it's open to the public restaurant, but there's something sort of like out of an old Ford Times magazine about it. I mean, just very mid-century Americana. You see people driving up in their wood-paneled station wagons.
And you know, they should be wearing Madras sports jackets.
Yes, there you go.
With little bow ties.
And what's one of the things that's just so nice about this meal, I mean, you have your steak or your fried chicken, each exemplary, with mashed potatoes, biscuits, a little salad, and then for dessert, there's only one choice for dessert, and that is a tiny little cup of pineapple sherbet. And that's all there is.
That's it. That's the entire thing.
That's the
exactly.
Menu. You know everything there is to know about Sleepy Hollow.
I mean, they have their menu. They have it down exactly pat. They don't overreach. They don't try new things. It almost reminds me of another favorite of Michael's, the Indian Trail in Winnetka, Illinois, which is now no longer around. But it was kind of a grand ladies' tea room that had guest luncheon, you know, which was like a little chicken croquette or something for lunch. And Sleepy Hollow is really one of these places that has not faded off the map.
And one thing I should mention, if you're visiting the Cowboy Hall of Fame, which is well worth visiting, mm-hmm. in Oklahoma City, Sleepy Hollow is practically around the corner.
Okay, fried chicken, steak, great. Guys, thank
Yahoo. You. Yahoo!
Major biscuits.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Stick shifts and safety belts, bucket seats have all got to go when we're driving in the car. It makes my baby seem so far. I need you here with me, not way over in a bucket seat. I need you to be here with me, not way over in a bucket seat.
The Stearns are authors of that indispensable guide, Road Food. Now, they're here every week, but you can get their food finds anytime. Just go to the website, splendidtable.org. Now, we're doing our own road food thing on the other side of the Atlantic. Next spring, we're heading out to dig into Italian road food. We're taking a trip to Tuscany and Emilia-Romagna. Now, this is the region Italians call the culinary capital of the country. Now, you can do it, too. You can find details on the website, splendidtable.org. Oh, and another thing to check out on the site is our weekly newsletter. It's called Weeknight Kitchen. It's brought to you by the farmers of Organic Valley. Now, every week we send you a new quick recipe. And best of all, thanks to those cows, it's free. You can register for it online at, you know where, splendidtable.org. Chefs get accolades, but with Thomas Keller, it's almost ridiculous. I mean, he's been called a genius, a wizard, and an obsessive perfectionist. His French Laundry restaurant in California keeps getting named the best in America. But duplicating perfection 3,000 miles away is nearly impossible. Except for Thomas Keller. New York City's newest and hottest ticket is his restaurant, Per Se. Now, we heard that Keller had rethought every inch of restaurant design to make Per Se fly. So to see what that meant, we asked for a tour. We joined Thomas Keller in the foyer of Per Se. Now, imagine behind us is a tall, glossy blue door flanked by glass walls. Before us is a quiet room of naturals, woods, metal, stone. Thomas, what was the dream for this restaurant?
It's the French Laundry Per Se.
That's where the Per Se came from.
Well, in part it came from there, certainly. Yeah. But you know, as you walk towards the restaurant, you see the same images that you see at the French Laundry, which is the blue door. The difference between our blue door here and our blue door in Yountville is this one doesn't open, and actually the glass panels next to them slide open so that you go in next to the blue door. And again, it was. You know, as we like to be playful, we like to surprise people, we like to bring a smile to people's faces. That was one way, coming in through the entrance, that hopefully brought a smile to people's
face. These big glass panels slide away all of a sudden. You're trying to pull
the door handle, and nothing happens, and the door next to it opens. But then you walk into the entrance here, which I think is really elegant. And what we really wanted to do was create an elegant space, something that felt New York, that felt cosmopolitan, that had that sense of luxury to it.
And very sensual, very sensual. Could you take us into the dining room?
Sure.
We're in the middle of the lunch service, so we're going to be very quiet. But the room is on two levels. There's a few steps going up to sort of a mezzanine. But Thomas, what's interesting is this is a small dining room.
It is by seating capacity. I mean, it's very spacious in the amount of room between the tables. But we have 16 tables here, and that's how many we have at the French Laundry, and it accommodates 62 people, which is the same number of guests that we can accommodate at the French Laundry, and that was done deliberately. And again, from a design point, you have very minimal amounts of materials here. You have the stainless steel, and then you have this beautiful Australian walnut. All on the walls, which were actually taken from one tree, so you can see as the panels.
Oh, man. Thomas, there's something else. I don't see any square tables here.
There are no square tables at all. They're all round tables. Again, the round table has a sense of luxury about it. The other feature here that was very important when we were designing the restaurant in relation to the French Laundry was the fireplace. This is actually a wood-fired, natural-fired fireplace, which is very difficult to put into a new skyscraper building in New York, but it was something that I was very adamant about.
It's a very warm-feeling room and a very peaceful-feeling room. Could we now go to the place in a restaurant that often it's warm but not very peaceful? Could we go to the kitchen?
Okay. On the way to the kitchen, we have one of the most important areas to me in the restaurant, and this is an area which we call the breezeway. And it's an association with the connection of the two buildings and
at French the French Laundry,
the main building and the kitchen, and of course that's a breezeway as well. And what it is we learned at the French Laundry, it's a transitional point for the service staff to go from what we call a very violent environment very sensuous, luxurious, calm environment. And the breezeway helps them make that transition. And the importance about the materials in the breezeway is to prepare them to step into a very luxurious area where they're the same material. So philosophically, it helps them transition from stainless steel
to the luxury and the sensuality.
Exactly.
I don't think I have ever seen anyone in any restaurant think this out in this way.
It's crazy.
We're walking through a wide walnut paneled area into the kitchen, which is completely covered almost to the ceiling with white tile and this French Laundry blue stripe going through it up at the top near the ceiling. And the kitchen is not huge, but it is so, there's so much open space between the different counters and stoves. What am I seeing here?
Well, again, when we did the kitchen here, we looked at the uses that we have at the French Laundry, because philosophically, we're doing the same food. The format of the menu is the same. The services are the same. Everything is the same between the two restaurants. It was very easy for us to design a kitchen that accommodated each one of those specific uses in a comfortable way.
That's Chef Thomas Keller taking us on a behind-the-scenes tour of his new New York City restaurant, Per Se. Now, when you think that every square foot of a restaurant has to produce income, Keller's design looks more and more like a high-wire act. Well, wait until you hear more about the kitchen. Now, we're going to have more of that tour to come, so stick around. Now, in his spare time, Thomas managed to write a new book, Bouchon, which is one of my favorites for this year. I mean, talk about sexy, fabulous bistro food. And, of course, it's a big, gorgeous book. Thomas could do nothing else, and you may need a crane to get it up on the counter. But here's some more of my picks for this year. For rookies and weeknight cooks, I've got three solid tomes. Celebrations 101 by Rick Rogers. Now, this is a party book, but the recipes are good, the shortcuts work, and they're great for weeknight suppers. A Year in a Vegetarian Kitchen by Jack Bishop. Now, this is where you feed the family with real-world recipes. It's accessible, delicious, and this food is kid-friendly. Everyday Dining with Wine by Andrea Immer. Think stylish, easy food and bargain wines for everyday drinking. Now, for the thrills and chills and love-to-cook crowd, think about Raw by Charlie Trotter and Roxanne Klein. Oh, so chefy. Yet it's a fascinating take on food, and it's a gorgeous read. Aroma by Mandy Aftel and Daniel Patterson. Now, this is another intriguing approach to cooking. A perfumer and a chef create fragrance for the dinner plate. The Greatest Dishes, Around the World in 80 Recipes by Anya von Bremsen. Impeccable recipes and information from one of our best food and travel writers. Then there's the blockbuster, The Gourmet Cookbook. 60 years of the best of Gourmet magazine. It's been tested and retested to guarantee success, and everything is here, including some golden oldies. Now, we're putting that whole list up on the website, splendidtable.org. Coming up, part two of the Mother of All Kitchen Tours with Chef Thomas Keller and the new Mussel wine on the shelf. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to The Splendid Table from American Public Media. I I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. This is The Splendid Table, the show about life's appetites. The Splendid Table is brought to you by Super Target, home of Archer Farms, where you can find modern takes on old-time classics like angel food cake, quiche, and garlic bread. Find them online at target.com/supertarget. Now, if you're just joining us today, we're taking a look at what goes into creating a world-class restaurant. Literally, I am talking about how a chef thinks out each element of its design. Thomas Keller, of Best Chef in America fame, is giving us a behind-the-scenes tour of his new baby, his New York restaurant, Per Se. It's a clone of his French Laundry eatery in California, and it opened to rave reviews. In fact, getting a reservation in this 16-table restaurant is nigh on to impossible. Now, earlier in the show, we had a glimpse of the dining room, and now we're in the kitchen. Now, this is often where a restaurant cuts losses with a Spartan setup. Coddle the diner, but never the cooks, or your bottom line is bright red. Well, Thomas Keller has turned the tables here. As we walk in, it's all airy white tile, stainless steel, and strangely for a restaurant kitchen, humming quietly. We join Thomas at the kitchen door.
When if you look at our menus, or if you experience a meal here, you begin with several different canapes, whether it's the coronets or the oysters and pearls, and that comes from a specific station. Jason over here, who's right on the corner of the stove, is our canapé chef. Now he has one of the hardest jobs in the whole restaurant. He'll do maybe 25 to 30 different dishes every day, and only two of them are ever written on the menu. The others we use for different things, you know, whether it's a special customer, somebody that comes from our immediate family within the industry, or somebody, say immediate family from within the industry, that sounds funny, but somebody from the industry, guests that returning over and over again, or special people that come from the French Laundry and vice versa. After that, you'll bump over here to where Anthony and Matthew are, and they're doing first course. So this is where all of the first course compositions come from. Okay, the two of them work in tandem to do those first courses. And then the next thing you would see on your menu after first course, and it's not appetizer or main course. We don't deal with it like that. It's canapé, first course, and then it goes to fish. And Jeremiah, who's in the back corner there, he does all of the fish. So that's Jeremiah. He works next to Jason. And Jason and Jeremiah will work in tandem as well. Again, the same philosophy and the same setup as we have the French Laundry. There's specific lines.
So there are teams.
Of people. There are teams. Now, Corey, who's our sous chef here this morning, who's our executive sous chef, who spent 3.5 years with me at French Laundry, he completes this team on this side. If you look right down there, there's three of them standing up.
Uh-huh.
He'll also, at any moment, be able to help Matthew and Anthony. If you can see, there's really no sight obstructions other than the shelves on the stove. So we're able to communicate with one another very calmly at a low voice, but also we'll be able to communicate with one another through eye contact. I mean, you get the evil eye sometimes. You don't have to scream at anybody anymore. You just give them the evil eye. But across from Jeremy is Philip, who's our meat cook. So that would be the next course. You've gone from canapé, first course, fish, now you're gone to meat. So Philip is doing all the meat courses for you. Now, one of the things that's very important that you notice, and the same thing at the French Laundry when we designed this kitchen, was that everything can be seen from the chef's point of view. All dishes can be seen from the chef's point of view going out, which is very important. So we can, you know, make sure that they look the way we want them. We can taste them at any moment we want to. But the other thing that's very important is that the chef's able to see them on the way back. So as they go out the kitchen, they come back the same way, which allows us as the chefs to actually see what our guests are doing to time their food better, but more important, actually see if they've enjoyed the food. What's wrong with that? They didn't like that hearts of pump? Oh, no, chef, they're filling up. You sure? Yeah. They want something else, though. So we want to make sure that our guests are enjoying their food. And the way to really ensure a guest is enjoying their food?
Did they leave it on their plate or not?
The Clean Plate Club, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. There's something here I haven't seen in other kitchens. You have white fabric taped over the countertops in some areas. Why is that?
Again, we want to, when we're plating our food, we want to see it the same way our guests see it. The other thing that you notice here, we have all incandescent lighting. There's no fluorescent.
Yes, exactly.
It's very specific lighting designed to spot each different area as well as the workstations. So it gives us the opportunity to see the food exactly as our guests see the food. And that's very important for us.
And these are the white tablecloths
there are many reasons. It also encourages us to work cleaner. We want to make sure at the end of the day that our tablecloth is as clean as it began. You can tell the type of service that you had.
Mm-hmm.
by the condition of the tablecloths at the end of the service. If they're really clean, you know you've had a really good organized service. If they've gotten a little frayed around the end, you wonder what happened. Why is that stain there? This is the Per Se kitchen, which only represents a third of the space back here. So we're going to walk back and I'll show you the other two areas and what they're specifically for.
This is one of the most luxurious setups I have seen.
This is interesting. This here is knife drawers for all the chefs.
We're at the other side of the counter from the kitchen.
Each chef de partie or each commis has his own knife drawers. I hated people to have bundles of knives, you know, stuffed in different areas. So I wanted to make sure everybody had their own space to keep their own things.
Let's take a look at those other areas that you mentioned. Oh, now this is another wide open area, open countertops, all stainless, white tile. What's this area?
So now we transition back into the private dining kitchen. And when we decided to do private dining, I said, okay, we can't really do private dining and a gastronomic dining in the same kitchen. Mm-hmm. So we have to add another area, which we did. We added dining rooms for it, and we added the kitchen for it. So this is the support for that. And if you can see, it's basically set up, organized the same way as Per Se's kitchen. There's actually six stations around this large central island. All of his stove is here. And then this is the pass table, which during a service would be covered with linen as well. One of the real important elements that I wanted to point out here is about a refrigeration. We don't have walk-ins. There's no centralized location for everybody to go to. A walk-in, as you know, is a refrigerated room where everybody keeps their products. Everybody keeps their mise en place. Everybody goes to that area, mm-hmm. all the different chef de parties. And because of that, typically it could be cluttered, it could be crowded, it could be disorganized. And it's one area at the French Laundry that we're constantly having to maintain. Here, I didn't want to have that situation, so we don't have a walk-in. What we did was we created these units, which are specifically sized to an area. So, for example, the fish butcher has one section, has one refrigerator.
So you broke out your walk-in.
We broke down the walk-in. And actually, as you walk through the back spaces here, you'll see each area has a designated amount of space in the refrigeration that's close to it.
Okay? I wish I could do that in my kitchen.
Preparations, all the stocks.
So this is the room.
A lot of the commis work in the morning. So when the commis comes in, he has a list that's prepared by his chef de partie the previous night. So he's beginning the work, or what we call the mise en place, mm-hmm. for the menu for that day.
So the slicing, the chopping.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and here's all the... Oh, there's butter.
Eggs, things like that.
How many kinds of butter do you have?
I think we have three different kinds of butter.
The tour continued. The details are amazing. Thomas took us through entire pantries devoted to specialty oils, vinegars, and chocolate, through administrative offices for reservationists, the wine staff, human resources, accountants, through the private dining room, the pastry room, the bakery, the chocolate room, and we finally stopped outside the temperature-controlled garbage room.
Downstairs, we won't visit downstairs, but downstairs we have two locker rooms. We have the men's locker room and the women's locker room. And one of the things that's unique about that is each one has its own shower. And I remember when I was in Paris, and I was working at Taille Vent, and they had a shower. And it was such a luxury to, after working very hard all day,
of course, yeah.
to be able to take a shower and then go out at night. You know, it was kind
yeah,
of fun.
So exactly.
I wanted to make sure that.
Exactly.
And that completes our journey.
Thomas, did you get exactly what you wanted?
It's a good question. In principle, yes, but you know, hindsight's 20/20. There's always something that you do a little different or tweak. So, the next time, and I say that with a great question mark in my mind. Next
would
time,
I go through this again? Yeah.
But no, I think you know, looking at the staff, I'm very proud of all of them and what they've done as well. Not only, I mean, because there's so much important for me is placed on their ability to work comfortably with the right equipment. For me to have expectations on them to produce at a very high quality. And ultimately, what that does for our guests, it gives them experience that we hope is unparalleled.
Thomas Keller, thank you.
Thank you.
Thomas Keller is chef owner of Restaurant Per Se in New York City, the French Laundry in California, and Bouchon in both California and Las Vegas. Bouchon is Thomas's latest cookbook, classic bistro food. Now, he left us with his recipe for mussels with saffron and mustard. Find it on the website, splendidtable.org. Wine expert Joshua Wesson went through a paradigm shift a while ago, from sommelier selling extremely pricey bottles to the man who believes modest money can buy very good sipping. Now Josh roams the world looking for bargains. He's co-creator of Bestsellers Wine Shops. Josh, it's good to have you back with us.
I love you and I love being with you.
You know, I have been seeing a wine on the shelf, and it's called Mourvèdre. What is this?
Mourvèdre. You pronounced that very well, by the way. It is a red grape that loves the sun, that was born in Spain, where there's a lot of sun, and now it is a hot little grape in the wine world. It's not a new grape. It's been around for hundreds of years, but it's enjoying this resurgence of interest in places like California and southern France, and even in Australia. It's considered one of those hip new grapes to play with because it can be delicious and wonderful when it's grown in the right climate, which means a hot climate.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't taste like anything else. It doesn't taste like Syrah. It doesn't taste like Zinfandel. Certainly doesn't taste like Cabernet or Merlot. It's this obscure but delicious grape, which I think deserves more credit.
What does it taste like?
Well, you know, it's the berries that are Mourvèdre. The little grapes are thick-skinned, and they tend to produce wines that are high in alcohol because it loves the sun. It gets very sweet,
right.
Very thick and tannic, and it has almost a meaty flavor to it, like roasted meat or a piece of lamb on the grill. And it adds that dimension of rustic, meaty flavors to this wonderful expression of fruit. And it balances the two together when it's grown in the right place, which means a sunny place, and produces flavors that are unlike any other.
It almost sounds like a muscle man who's wearing some wonderful hat that's very frivolous and sweet.
It's not a little girly man wine, that's for sure. It's a kicking wine. You got to be prepared, you know, when you drink Mourvèdre. It's one of those grapes that takes an assumed name everywhere it goes. It's never called the same thing in two countries. Cabernet is Cabernet, Merlot is Merlot. But Mourvèdre in France becomes Monastrell when it gets down to Spain, where it happens to be the second most widely planted red grape and most important grape in Spain.
Uh-huh.
And it's called Mataro when it's grown in California or in Australia. But no matter what, you know, alias it's using, it's the same thick-skinned, delicious, heady red grape to make into wine.
So name some names for me. What specific should I look for?
Well, if you start out in Spain, where the grape came from, you can get fantastic Monastrell, which is their word for Mourvèdre, wines for under $10. I had one a week ago called Casa Castillo, and this is from the area of Jumilla. And if you don't spit on the waiter, you know, you can probably get a great bottle sent to your table at a Spanish restaurant. But you find it in wine shops for under $10. I paid $8 for this wine. And my God, if I had put it in a brown paper bag and served it to my wine-savvy friends, they all would have thought it's a $20 bottle. It's just really exciting. It has these meaty, rich flavors. $8, incredible value.
Any others?
Yeah. I was actually at a Mourvèdre tasting, and there were some expensive wines there. Ridge, which is a very famous producer of Zinfandel and red wines in California, makes a Mataro, what they call Mourvèdre in California, and it sells for about $23, $24. It comes from the Pato Vineyard, P-A-T-O, in the central part of the state, and it is a knockout of a wine. It's inky. You can't read any type through it. It makes your lips purple. But, you know, you have it with a piece of lamb, whether it's a kebab or a leg off the grill, and you are going to be in Mourvèdre heaven. And I also at this tasting had a blend from Australia, from a producer named Veritas, Heinrich Shiraz Mataro Grenache. They like to blend it over there. And this wine was astounding for its complexity. It was one of the most complex Mourvèdre-based wines I'd ever had. And it's pricey. It sells for about $25, but it's the real deal. And that's a wine that I would lay down for 10 years because by that time, it won't make your lips purple, maybe just a little bit blue.
Josh, thank you.
My pleasure.
Josh Wesson is co-founder of Bestsellers Wine Shops. Now you can find his wine picks on the website, splendidtable.org. food expert Sally Schneider has worked out brilliant strategies for cooking simple yet lusty food that's actually good for us. She's always digging into some technique or dish or ingredient and coming up with great concepts. Her book, appropriately enough, is called A New Way to Cook. Sally, great to have you back.
Hi, Lynn.
Sally, could we talk vanilla beans?
My favorite thing.
But you know, the reason I want to talk about them, have you seen how now in supermarkets even we're seeing all these different kinds of vanilla beans?
Yes, and I'm thrilled. What vanilla beans do, Lynn, is they act kind of like a truffle. They punch up and push forward all the flavors of whatever they come in contact with. They also accentuate the sweetness. So, for example, if I have fruits that are less than dazzlingly flavored, like pears, or I've even done it with frozen berries, vanilla bean with some sugar will totally transform them and make them seem like you've just picked them. It's really incredible.
Do you ever use them in savory dishes?
Absolutely. And I got onto that when I had a meal in a very famous restaurant in Paris and had lobster with a vanilla bean sauce that was incredible. So what I do in the summer is I do my boiled lobster and I serve a shallot butter scented with vanilla bean that is beautiful. I've also taken the vanilla pods, the leftovers, which I'll tell you about in a minute, and I just threw them once into a pot of boiling root vegetables that I was going to puree, and it was fabulous. And so I also do that, you know, I use it with duck and pork, those kinds of meats that want fruit sweet flavors. The other thing that's interesting is if you have a very acidic tomato sauce, a little bit of a vanilla bean can round out those flavors and rescue it.
So what should we look for when we buy vanilla beans?
Vanilla beans usually come in a glass jar, so you have to kind of look through the jar to see what you're getting. You'll see this 6 or 7 to 8 inch sort of brown, leathery looking pod. It should look moist. It shouldn't rattle because that means it's dry and brittle. You want to be able to cut them. You want them to be soft and flexible. If you can check them out, they should be very fragrant.
So once you get it home, it's soft. What do you do with it? How do you store a vanilla bean? How long can you keep it?
I wrap them tightly in plastic and then store them in a plastic container. And I find that that way they stay soft for several months. If they get hard and you're using them in something that you're cooking, you can put the whole bean into the, if it's got a liquid, and that will soften it slightly enough to cut them. Because for me, the secret of really using a vanilla bean is not to throw the whole pod in, but to slice it in half lengthwise where you'll find these kind of jammy seeds inside. And that's how you really release the explosive vanilla flavor.
So can you keep reusing the pods?
What I do, Lynn, is I take the pods out after I've cooked a creme anglaise or something, and I wash them and dry them. They won't have that potent, strong flavor that I want in a dessert. But what I'll do is I'll put them in a jar with some sugar. It can be brown sugar, white sugar, whatever. And that, like a truffle, the sugar will take on a vanilla flavor, and then I can use that in other desserts. Or I stick them in a jar of cocoa, mimicking the fabulous Italian cocoa I used to buy that I can't find anymore that was lightly scented with vanilla and had this explosive chocolate flavor. And finally, sometimes I just put them in a jar with some vanilla extract, and that fortifies the extract and gives it a much more powerful flavor. So you get a big bang for your buck this way.
Sally, thank you.
You're welcome, Lynn.
Sally Schneider is author of A New Way to Cook. Now, you can get her recipe for vanilla bean syrup, well, you know where, the website, splendidtable.org. Well, it's time for the weekly trivia challenge. Now, this question is about those oh-so-simple German wine labels. When you see the word Trucken on a German wine label, what does it mean? Now, we're going to have that answer in a moment, and we're going to be opening the lines for your calls. You can get to us at 800-537-5252. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to The Splendid Table from American Public Media. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and this is The Splendid Table, the show for people who love to eat. The Splendid Table is brought to you by Super Target, one-stop shopping for groceries, cookware, and entertaining. You can find them online at target.com/supertarget. Now, we're going to be taking your calls in a moment. The number is 800-537-5252. But first, I've got the answer to this week's trivia challenge. Now, the question was about German wine labels, one of the most complicated things on earth. Now, when you see the word Trocken on a German wine label, what does it mean? Well, Trocken translates as dry. Now, since German wine labels rank as the most confusing in the world, let me tell you a little code. Now, this applies to many of Germany's premium sweet wines, great for holiday desserts. The longer the name, the sweeter and richer the wine. So, Auslese is lush with some sweetness. Baron Auslese is made from hand-picked late harvest grapes. It's rich and kind of honeyed. And then there is the king. The rare, the profoundly difficult to make, Trockenbaren Auslesen. Now, this is what a late harvest grape dreams of becoming, a constantly changing party on your tongue with just a smidge of dryness. Now, Trocken is in the name because the grapes are practically raisins. This is the wine that can make tough guys weep in gratitude. The lines are officially open now. You can reach us at 800-537-5252, and we will talk. Okay, let's see who has been waiting on the line. We have Melinda in North Hopkinton, New Hampshire. Hey, Melinda, what do you want to talk about? What's up?
The question I had for you is, last summer, I believe it was, you recommended a very, very good cherry pitter. And it has saved me hours and hours and hours. And I'm wondering if you have an apple peeler, corer, slicer, or any of that kind of permutation that you could also recommend that would be as time-saving. And
you do a lot of apple pies and that kind of thing?
Yes.
Uh-huh. You know, I think I'm what you're hearing now is me tap dancing while I search the brain.
That's fun, too.
Yeah, I think the problem is cherry pitters, I think, are easier than apple corers. I've tried a few apple corers, and of course, I can't remember the brand names now. And I found it was just easier to peel.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the late 90s, Cook's Illustrated, you know, it's the magazine that takes no advertising and they
right.
do all of these product comparisons, tested out apple peelers, I think. And I don't think they were pleased either. Now, there's one. If you're really doing a ton of apples, you know, like you're doing 10 pies at a time or whatever, there was one that I remember that had potato and apple in the title.
Oh.
It was like apple potato something or potato apple something that you could peel a potato. I mean, if you can peel a potato, you can peel an apple.
Right.
But the problem I saw, because I love to try those apple corers, you know, the kind where once you get the apple peeled, you just press it through and it makes it into 8 sections.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
A little hand one.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran into a problem with those, and I ran into a problem with the ones that you turn on a crank and it's like a machine.
Right, me too.
They never got all the core out. The part of them that would remove the core was always too small. It's like they were all designed for mini apples that had very tight seeds.
Crab apples.
Well, yeah, whatever. And the thing that always bugged me was that by the time I got done fiddling, you know, with getting the seeds out, I might as well have peeled the apple myself.
Yeah, that's
now,
how I feel.
I did discover one thing. Again, I'm not offering you a lot of help here. Vegetable peelers don't do as good a job peeling an apple as a sharp paring knife does.
Right.
And the other thing, because working in restaurants sometimes, you know, you do an awful lot of this kind of thing, is I learned that one of the fastest ways to peel an apple for me is cut it in half, do a Y cut, meaning like a V cut to get rid of the core and get rid of the stem. And then you just very quickly with a paring knife peel away the skin. And then with the paring knife, you just make a circular kind of dig into the center of it. And wham, the core is gone, the skin's gone, and now you can cut it any way you want.
Oh, that's helpful.
Because, yeah, it is.
Sometimes it's easier to do it yourself instead of a gadget.
Well, the thing that I've used that really is helpful, especially if the apple is not super hard, is a hard-boiled egg cutter. Oh. Once you get it peeled and you're halved or quartered, then you can put it in that hard-boiled egg thing where you have those wires and you just press it down.
Yeah.
A super hard apple sometimes resists that, but all that happens is the springs snap. You know, it's not a big deal. So that's what I would do, because I've just never found one that I thought was worth. By the time I got done fiddling with it, I was just furious, and I'd spent $30.
And that saves me a search.
That's right. And you know what? A really good paring knife, like a 4-incher. And you will be in seventh heaven.
Thank you so very much.
You are
I
welcome. Enjoy the pies.
Thank you.
Bye, Melinda. You can call us at 800-537-5252. Let's see, who is up next? We have Matthew calling from Corvallis, Oregon. Hey, Matthew, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I was hoping to ask you about some hot pepper sauce recipes. We had a really great year for growing hot peppers. And I have two or three different kinds, and I didn't want to just do the standard dry them on a line and then shove them in a jar for preserving them for use throughout the winter, and I was hoping you might have some suggestions for good sauces or good ideas on way to keep them.
Well, let's see now. Okay, how to preserve them and how to use them. Any chili, but especially the super hot ones. There's a thing that I ran across in Holland where they take Holland gin, which is called Genefa there, but you could do this with vodka, you could do this with gin, and essentially they put the dry or the fresh chili in there, split it so the seeds come out, let it sit covered, steeped in that alcohol for maybe 3 or 4 days, strain it, and then you use just a few drops of that alcohol the way almost you would use Tabasco sauce.
Sure.
You know, that idea that it just gives a sparkle. And the nice thing about using the alcohol is there's two factors at work, because supposedly alcohol releases flavors that neither water nor fats do.
Mm-hmm.
So it releases everything water and fat does plus others, so it tends to help blossom flavors in a dish. And then the chili adds sparkle.
Oh, that sounds great.
So, you know, like when you're browning onions for a stew or that kind
sure.
of thing, just a teaspoon or so of this stuff.
Without the vinegar haze that you have to wait to clear get from Tabasco.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you'd boil most of the alcohol off, but you'd get that little sparkle in there. And also, the alcohol helps preserve that chili. Now, you can do something similar with vinegar, too.
Mm-hmm.
But always strain out the chili, because otherwise you can really have a problem with, you know, botulism.
I was wondering about that, because I actually have some homemade cider vinegar that I've been kind of letting age over from apples we picked this year and pressed, and I was going to use it, but I wasn't sure of the acidity. I need to do a measurement on it.
Yeah, because you really want a very high acid content when you're doing that. And as far as, you know, what I love to do with chilies, too, because if you think about it, what do chilies work with, okay? Almost every chili in the world loves garlic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, almost.
Oh, I do too. So I've been accused of being heavy-handed.
Yeah, well, me too. You know, there's a reason why I buy 10 heads of garlic a week. But we haven't had any vampire incidents in our house.
That's good.
Yeah, so this proves that it works. But at any rate, they love garlic. They love acids.
Mm-hmm.
So citrus juices, lime, lemon, vinegars, that kind of thing.
Would you tend to use a fresh or would you tend to use a bottled?
Oh, I'd use fresh. Never go near bottled citrus. Boy,
sometimes your canning recipes call for bottled.
I know. I think those are people who couldn't get their hands on a fresh one. Now, there is nothing more vile, I think, than other than cooking wine. Cooking wine is up there with vile. But at any rate, the other thing that chilies love are sugar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that balance of hot and sweet, which is the theme you find all over Southeast Asia.
Sure.
And one of the things that might be fun to do, you'd have to freeze it to be safe,
mm-hmm.
but you could take those hot chilies mm-hmm. and chop them up, you know, just do a fine chop in the blender, or the food processor rather, but don't puree them. Add brown sugar and add orange zest and a little apricot jam and vinegar. In so many ways, make a sweet, hot, fruity, chili-tasting kind of sauce. Stick that in the freezer. Now, that could be a glaze for almost anything that passes on the grill or the oven.
Sure.
And I mean, like, you know, even a glaze on something like sweet potatoes,
mm-hmm.
which would be dynamite with this. You could use this also just as a sauce on the table. You know, to dip ribs in, to dip grilled onion in, it would be fabulous. So it's that sort of sweet, hot,
fruity.
Mm-hmm.
And then that spice, that explosion of spice.
You're making me salivate.
Well, wouldn't that be fabulous? I think that would be so delicious. So there's some basic themes for you.
Sounds great. I was looking for something more than just the standard.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, anybody can do a salsa, but this is, you're going to work miracles.
Sounds great. Love the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Matthew, and thanks for calling.
Take care.
You too.
Bye.
You can reach us at 800-537-5252. We have Patrick calling from Farmington Hills, Michigan. Patrick, welcome.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi. What do you want to talk about?
I'd like to talk about juniper berries.
Oh, okay.
A few weeks ago, you mentioned juniper berries, and you know, it's fall in Michigan, and on any given Sunday, I'll have pheasants, grouse, or most importantly, I have ducks.
You are mallards. So lucky.
Yeah. Well, so the question I have is, can I harvest these myself? And if not, you know, how would I get them?
Okay. Well, first of all, I wouldn't recommend harvesting them yourself because there's a lot of berries out there that look okay and could lead to not very happy results.
That's why I asked.
Yeah. Now, juniper berries, if you don't find them in any of your local stores, there's a couple of places that can mail order them to you. One is Vans, V-A-N-N-S. The other one is Penzies. There's the Spice Mart, and these are all online.
Okay.
And the way they're used, now, if you know what gin tastes like, that's kind of a little bit the taste of a juniper berry, because it's one of the things that's used to flavor gin. And it has this sort of almost menthol-y, peppery flavor to it. And it's very traditional in Northern Europe with all the game, and since you seem to have so much game, it's a real natural.
Yeah.
One of the ways a German friend of mine used to use them is that she, whatever game she had, she would crush the juniper berries with garlic. And you could do this in a food processor. So like for a tablespoon of juniper berries, she'd have 2 or 3 cloves of garlic. And she'd mix that with sour cream. And she would take small birds or the breast of the duck or that kind of thing and just put it into that mixture in the refrigerator for a couple of hours. And then she'd grill or roast.
Oh, that sounds great.
You know, you wipe it off, but it gives it this kind of luscious flavor and a tad of tang. And the other thing is juniper berries love red wine. So if you're, let's say, sautéing the tender parts of the game that you get, after you take it out of the pan, deglaze the pan, take all those crispins that you have in the pan up with a little garlic and some juniper and red wine and just boil that all down.
Just make a reduction.
Yeah, and just a few, light, 1 or 2 lightly crushed juniper berries. They're very strong. So okay. Better to use too little than too much.
Okay, perfect.
Hey, thanks for a great question.
Thank you.
You take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. Juniper berries are one of those things that, by the way, keep for a long time. So once you get a jar of them, keep them out of light and away from heat, and you'll keep them for about a year, and they'll be in good shape. By the way, you can get to us, guys, 800-537-5252. Well, trivia's taken yet another turn. Jennifer Elias and her partner Julie Tucker have come up with the Smarts game. It's a trivia game based on food. I've got Jennifer on the phone. Hey, Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. Nice to be here.
Now, I'm looking at this, and it says Food Smarts. It's in a box. And it's a bunch of cards. They look like flashcards.
Exactly. Well, Julie and I actually met a couple of years ago when we were both very passionate about wine. And we decided that there needed to be a fun way to learn about wine in this world. And so we actually created something called Wine Smarts, which is like an adult version of flashcards with questions and answers and real information on the back. And then once wine took off, we realized that there were lots of other things that people wanted to learn about in sort of an easy and fun way. So then we created one on food and one on chocolate.
So what's a sample question, for instance?
I'll give you one. Would you like food, chocolate, wine?
Let's do wine.
Okay. True or false, port and sherry are both fortified wines?
True.
Exactly. They're both fortified, which means that alcohol or distilled grape spirits have been added. And then there are also multiple choice questions. If you want, I can do one of those as well.
Sure, let's do a multiple choice.
How about a chocolate one?
Sure.
Ganache is A, a chocolate souffle, B, a mixture of chocolate and cream, C, a famed French chocolatier, or D, French for chocolate solids.
It's cream and chocolate.
Exactly. One of my favorite things is it actually means imbecile.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
So is that on the card?
Well, it is on one of the other cards. Yeah, apparently somebody working in someone's patisserie accidentally spilled scalding milk into a bowl of chocolate squares, and his patron got so mad at him that he called him a ganache. And thus a wonderful, tasty treat was born.
So how did you guys came up with the idea because you wanted to learn about wine, but how are people using these? Are they actually using it as a game?
Yeah, we're finding a bunch of different things. People are using it as a game, and they're sitting around at a dinner table and using it because you don't have to get out a board in pieces. Since it is just flashcards, you can use it in the car if you're driving to a restaurant, or you can use it after a fun dinner with friends. And then we have found that there's some restaurants with both their wait staff and their wine staff who are using it for education as well. So it's kind of crossing across.
I'm picturing parents quizzing their children so they can grow up feeling very knowledgeable. Hey, Jennifer, thanks for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having us. And if people want to find out about us, we're at smartsco.com.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot.
Great.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Jennifer Elias is co-creator with Julie Tucker of the Smarts Question and Answer Cards. Now, for information, go to the website, splendidtable.org. Well, that's the show for this week. Thanks for joining us. Hey, remember, you can call us anytime. The number is 800-537-5252. And until next week, let me leave you with this toast. Here's to what my lawyer taught me. Say it with flowers. Say it with eats. Say it with kisses. Say it with sweets. Say it with jewelry. Say it with drink. But be careful. Never, ever say it in ink. The Splendid Table is brought to you by Super Target. Everything you heard here today and so much more can be found on our website, splendidtable.org. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly newsletter, Weeknight Kitchen. It's our attempt to simplify your kitchen life midweek. You'll also find details on our spring trip to Italy on that very same website. Our producer is Sally Swift with Jennifer Russell. Our technical director is Jennifer Lubke. Our website is managed by Judy Graham and Julia Schrankler. Have a great week. Be sure to join us next time. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper.
American Public Media.